a quick message before we get into this week's episode. For longtime listeners of the show, you know that I have been very reluctant to add sponsors and to add recommendations to our podcast. Our priority is to you, to the writers, and to the creators. And so we've held off to make sure that we can find partnerships that we feel good about and products that I can honestly recommend. And that's why I'm so excited to recommend this week's sponsor to you, Quillbot.com, Quillbot.com. This is a tool that I am personally using to build a newsletter that I haven't announced yet, but it's been hugely beneficial for me. So Quillbot is a paraphrasing tool. And the way that I'm using it is I'm scrubbing long form articles that are very, very in-depth with information that I know my audience will really value and appreciate. And I copy that content and I paste it into Quillbot. And Quillbot paraphrases all of the text into a couple sentences, sometimes a couple paragraphs, to really shorten and pack in the information, which allows me to better piece this information into a curated newsletter that I am sending out weekly. For people that listen, you know that I really, really believe in the newsletter space. We believe that newsletters are great businesses to start, and you should start one. If you want to get involved in online media and start creating a business for yourself, a newsletter is a great place to start. And this tool, Quillbot, has been so beneficial for me in building this curated newsletter that I'm working on. It makes it so that I can jam-pack a lot of information into not a lot of space. And it really, really has helped me format my newsletter and provide the information to my readers in a way that I know they enjoy, in a way that I know they can quickly digest, in a way that I feel really proud about. So once again, check out this week's sponsor, Quillbot.com, Quillbot.com. It's easy to sign up and tell them that Tim sent you. All right, let's get on to the show. What's up, man? We are on a Sunday, switching it up, and so the vibe is a little bit different. Sounds like you got some cool stuff on the agenda today. What's going on?
First thing on the agenda is you. So, right before we pressed record here, you were telling me the reason you were late for the call is because you were deep in a LinkedIn advertising rabbit hole. So we're going to give you a pass because it's actually a kind of an interesting topic. For people listening, welcome to the show. We got a bunch to talk about today. One of the things is the fact that Tim is working on like a new ad project and said something that kind of caught my attention. So I told him, I'm like, hold on, before you even say another word, like, let's just get into it. Let's get into this on the show. So can you give people just like the 2-sentence background of why it is you're down a LinkedIn ad rabbit hole right now? And then I've got a couple of questions I really want to hear you answer about what you've learned so far.
Me too. And I think this is actually like a really, really cool topic because I have been fascinated and surprised and really intrigued with what I have discovered over the past 3 or probably 4 days since I've been doing some swipe file type stuff. So the 30-second version is at Stodzy, we are investing in a sales team in both outbound sales and in advertising. It's something we've never done before. Everyone who listens to me knows that I've basically built everything through SEO and through long form content. So this is really new to me. I have taken a lot of inspiration from advertising that I find, and all the ads that I see on LinkedIn suck. And I'm shocked at how bad they suck because LinkedIn, I mean, you would think LinkedIn is a B2B platform fundamentally, and B2B, although it's like boring and it's not cool to be a fancy entrepreneur and selling like courses and products, if you want to be like gazillionaire status, you're on the B2B space just because the scalability is so much higher in the enterprise world. And so I expected there to be some really, really sophisticated advertising. I haven't seen any. And then when I'm on Instagram, and I even went on Facebook, surprise, surprise, to check out some of the ads there. You know, of course, I get served with like the Tony Robbins and I never remember his name, Russell Brunson, right? The guy that does ClickFunnels, is that his name? Russell Brunson.
I don't know. It sounds familiar though. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the guy that does ClickFunnels, he runs millions of dollars worth of advertising. Another guy named Dan Henry keeps showing up. And these ads are sophisticated. They're attention grabbing. They lead you to like a really well formatted sales page with good copy. And on LinkedIn, it's hardly the case. So most of the ads are just video ads that don't even necessarily feature the product. Like, so for instance, IBM has an ad about Wimbledon, you know? So it's just a branding video. There's really no like direct response oriented. And so Stodzy is B2B. I am going to be targeting behavioral healthcare professionals. And I'm going into this with the approach that I can personalize it, bring in some like sophisticated marketing, such as good, attractive ads that lead to well-written, high-converting sales pages, and then see how it works. Like, I'm just so shocked that the advertising on LinkedIn is so poor compared to how effective and sophisticated they are on LinkedIn and Facebook.
Have you seen a difference between the companies, like the same company advertising in two different places? I'm curious if that's ever come up in your research.
No, and I looked for that. So I was looking at Gym Launch as well. You sent me, I'm sorry I'm laughing right now. There's an ads library on Facebook where you can see the live ads of companies. And over the past year and a half, I've asked Ethan for this like 9 times. I can never remember it and I never save it. So I was looking at the ads library on Facebook. And of course, Gym Launch is really, really good. They're a high level advertiser. And so then I went to their LinkedIn page and they have no ads. They're not running ads at all on LinkedIn, which surprises me because LinkedIn is becoming more, I don't know what the word is, like not so stuffy business, you know, little bit more commenting and sharing and personal, there's personalization to it. And so I'm surprised, but to answer your question, no, like the gurus on Instagram and Facebook are not advertising on LinkedIn, and the ones that are, aren't doing anything worthwhile. And so I feel like there's such a huge opportunity here that I didn't recognize before.
That's super interesting. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people saying that like LinkedIn is worth paying attention to, and that you know, it's kind of starved for interesting content, which we could get into in a little bit. But I'm curious, why now? So you built your entire career on like organic, entire business built on organic. Why build a sales team? Why start advertising?
Well, sidebar, but I work really hard, and I got a 2.5-year-old now, as I can 9-month-old, and I'm sales, you know? And so I'm constantly grinding, constantly looking for the next meal to kill. And I love doing it, don't get me wrong, but it's just to the point where we have plenty of cash flow. For the past 10 years of running Stodzy, I have been the sales department. And there's a lot to that. It's not like my phone just rings off the hook and it's like one call closes and I just say like, oh yeah, sure, let me send you a contract and you sign it. These are high dollar deals. And so sometimes they take weeks, sometimes months. I've had deals that take years to come into fruition. And it's a lot of work. You know, I'm constantly SEOing the website, constantly generating leads, constantly taking phone calls, follow-up phone calls, getting contracts signed. Yeah, since I moved to Colorado with the kiddos, there's this lake that I live right by, and I go for walks around it every afternoon, and I just started thinking to myself, like, damn, I don't think I have to do this by myself anymore. Like, I think I have some resources, and mostly it was a fear thing, because I've always been very intimidated by advertising, just by spending money and probably burning it. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting to the point where like I'm confident enough in myself that I can embrace this process and figure out as I go along. And it doesn't have to be a slam dunk right away, but I know if I give myself some time, it's going to work.
That's awesome, man. It's funny that this came up. I didn't plan for this, but I just wrote something about this last week for Hampton's newsletter as well. So every week we send out, like, we call it the Five on Friday, which is just five quick pieces of insight, inspiration, tools, resources, stuff like that, that came up in the Slack group from week to week. And I think it was last week early on, there was this whole conversation about literally this. How do you give up founder-led sales, and how do you find and like incentivize that first salesperson? And so we did a little bit of a write-up on it, but it's so interesting to hear that you're going through this as well. I'm curious. So you mentioned that you brought somebody on. Where did you end up finding somebody? Like, how did you end up finding that first salesperson?
Well, I'm still going to be closing the deals. So I don't think salesperson is the right phrase. Probably outreach is the right phrase. You know that I've had a team in the Philippines, and like, I really, really appreciate and respect the whole team over there. Like, they're really amazing people. One of the advantages I have is that in the behavioral healthcare space, there's a giant database called SAMHSA, and I basically can pull a list of like 14,000, probably more now. There's probably 20,000 or so behavioral healthcare facilities in the country. And I'm just going to pull the list. And I brought in a new outbound rep who, I mean, I also just got very lucky. There's a company that I've used to find people. It's called virtualstafffinder.com. It's where I found both Davey and Raymond, who've worked for me for, geez, I think like 4 years at this point. And then this girl that I just brought on, they really source it. So you tell them exactly what you're looking for, and they find it for you. And when I interviewed this girl, she was teaching me stuff because she knows how to use Close, which is the CRM that we use. She knows how to... So LinkedIn Sales Navigator is really cool, but one of the problems about it is that you get capped. So you can only send like 20 or so outreaches a month or something like that. I don't even know exactly how much it is. And she knew all the tools that you can use to actually pull the personal information from their LinkedIn page so that you can just send them an email instead of going right through LinkedIn. So after I got off it was a Zoom call with this girl who's going to be doing our outreach, I was pumped. I was super pumped. Like, wow, this is definitely going to work. So I got lucky. Virtual Staff Finder has been a great, great resource for me. I've hired five or six people through that website at this point. And every one of them, man, they're just great. They're such good people, and I love working with them.
Nice. Yeah, it's super interesting, man. I think I'd be curious to hear how this continues to go. It's cool that you're working through it. I think a lot of people listening to this are probably in a similar situation where they've hustled to get to a certain point with the agency. Now, in order to grow further or potentially just like continue evolving in terms of how they spend their time, they're realizing they're going to have to somehow give up that sales role. And that's tough. It's not something that happens overnight. You don't just hire a salesperson immediately and it's done. Like, this is going to be a thing that plays out over weeks and months. And I think I'd be curious to keep like checking in as you go, because it's a really, like, I like case studies like this where you're like, oh, we're actually doing this. You know, here's actually how we did something. Yeah. So that's cool. I think you remind me, I guess, speaking of like that same vein, did I tell you I was on the front page of Reddit? Or of Reddit's r/entrepreneur last week.
Yeah, that's like, and you're a Redditor too. That's probably some kind of life accomplishment for you. Too bad that you didn't get 10,000 shares on Threads.
They're not. Yeah, they won't let me into Threads. I've tried to join. Well, funny enough, I'm actually not really a Redditor. I mean, I respect it. I like the platform and stuff like that. But I've never really spent a lot of time there, and I've been experimenting with it for Hampton, really, more than anything else. So we have this theory that if we can become like a well-respected voice in a couple of different online communities, that'll pay dividends over time, right? So the idea there for people listening is like, this is something I've been trying to develop over the last year or so, is just this idea of like community-led marketing. And I haven't found a great term for it yet, because I feel like a lot of the great catchphrases have just been taken by marketing gurus or whatever. But here's kind of the essence of it. I've run a couple of online communities that have been pretty large, everything from like just a couple hundred people to, you know, Trends was like 10 to 15,000 people. And in every single case, no matter how big the community is, there's only a handful of people in the group that are really standout contributors to the group. And everybody knows them. Behind the scenes, everybody knows them. So if you're listening to this and you like tweet at Tim and I, we know who you are, especially if you've done it more than once or twice, or like if you're involved in the community. Sean's a great example right now, leading the community. The same thing was happening at Trends. The people who own and run these communities, they know your name if you're just even a little bit helpful on a regular basis, because it's so rare. And so the theory that I've kind of been like working through is like, okay, well, how do you do that on purpose and turn it into like a benefit for your company? And that's where a lot of the experimentation comes from. So we're trying to do that for Hampton on Reddit and like Hacker News. And again, the idea is not just to go there and like siphon off traffic, although that is kind of the end result. The real goal is to go become a respected member of those communities, contribute, like get to know the community. And then the extension of that is that people know your name and eventually the right people will find their way to your site. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. It reminds me of Nicholas Cole. The phrase that came to my mind, by the way, is contributor marketing, if you are looking for a buzzword.
That's a great one.
Dude, you're welcome. You can have it. Yeah, you can have it. No problem. If you ever read some of Nicholas Cole's old Medium posts, he, before he even built his following on Medium, which eventually turned into Twitter and Substack, and now him and Dickie are killing it, he built his whole following on Quora. And all he would do is write really in-depth responses to people on Quora. And that's how he got like 10 million views, I think was the number that he always bragged about over the course of a year, was by doing exactly that, like contributing, but really, really contributing to the point where it's like so clear. And what's the other guy's name? The funny guy with the hair. We've talked about him a few times. He's in, you interviewed him for your newsletter thing. Altucher, Altucher?
Yeah, James Altucher,
Yeah. James Altucher. He did the same thing. He built his first following just contributing on Quora as well. So, yeah, that's dope, man. Contributor marketing, you should do it.
Well, first of all, I love the term. 100%, that's got to be it, because I think you captured it perfectly there. Funny enough, I didn't think about this, but Jordan Peterson, same thing, right? That guy's huge now. His first book deal came from a Quora post that he wrote.
Yeah.
So let me tell you a little bit about what I've learned so far. So I created all these accounts like 2 weeks ago. Maybe I'll even share my screen. Mind giving me screen share? I created these accounts a couple weeks ago. And for people who are thinking about this, there's a couple things you got to know. The first is, the reason these communities are effective is because there's like a social currency system in place that basically gives you status depending on how much you actually contribute. And that contribution is measured by other members of the community. So that's a dorky way of saying, like, on Reddit, people can upvote and downvote your posts. On Hacker News, you get points like for people who like your posts. And then those eventually do a couple of things. First, they give you standing in the community, but also like on Reddit, in some places you can't even post until you've gotten past a certain amount, right? These are all quality controls in order to try and make the group function well and not just attract a whole bunch of like scammers. So one of the first things I was trying to crack was on Reddit, that concept of like, how do you get the sort of baseline level of what they call it, karma, that you need in order to start posting, right? And so I just spent like a night answering a whole bunch of questions that people had on there. And again, these are for people listening, I'm sharing my screen. The goal is not to siphon traffic. And somebody like Justin Welsh would tell you, like, he'll spend a year just contributing on a community before he'll even sell into it. So, you know, he was on LinkedIn for 2 years before he really made a huge business there. Then he went to Twitter. And I'm pretty sure this might be slightly outdated at this point, but I was listening to a bunch of interviews with him, and at the time he was, you know, 6 months into his Twitter audience building. He's like, I probably won't sell there for another 6 to 12 months because it was just so important to build up the credibility first. So here's what I'm learning. I went and spent a bunch of time commenting on posts and just trying to like lend feedback. And what I've learned is, one, there is a huge asymmetric, I guess, upside on certain posts, or what I should say is, like this Pareto principle at play, right? So if you write 20 well thought out responses, one of them is going to have a much bigger impact on your visibility and your standing than all the rest, right? And it's almost impossible to predict which one of those are. But in our case, this was like the first one. So we're on a post here. Somebody basically asked a question and said, like, I've got $75,000 to play with, looking to create a side hustle that nets $2,000 to $3,000 a month. Give me ideas. And here's the interesting thing. I didn't even comment directly on this post, right? Somebody else did. This guy said, instead of side hustling, like, use the money as a down payment on a business. So his was the top comment. And then I just commented on his comment and said, like, yeah, I've heard this works. And so for people watching, you'll see the actual response that I left was quite a bit more detailed than that. I said, like, yes, I've heard this works. Here's how somebody I know does it. And I kind of like laid out this really interesting deal structure that essentially allows this person that I know to acquire businesses for zero money down, and then grow them. And if they can't grow them, they end up giving them back to the owner. So it's a whole big thing. But this was like the first thing that we had that like really sort of took hold. And by the end of our first week, we had like 100 karma. And you can see 89 of it was from this post. Then here's the last thing I'll say. So once we had that much, I was able to start actually sharing posts. And the next thing I did was shared this puppy. And this is what went like super popular. This was on the front page of the Entrepreneur subreddit for like 2 days. It's got 1,500 upvotes, 229 comments, and it basically put our account on the map. It here again, though, if you look at like what this actually is, I copy and pasted like a full length interview that we did with this guy who has a $10 million gravel hauling business. And I actually think I linked off to our site somewhere in here, but it's like one word. Yeah, it literally says this. It's like, this is the full interview about the gravel hauling business. He also happens to run like Airbnbs. And I said, like, if you want to see how he does the Airbnb stuff, like that information is here. And then the rest is just a full length interview. And that's just a quick look at like an experiment that I'm doing that is working interestingly. The one word link in there did end up sending some traffic to our site. Not a ton, but like enough that it was worth doing. And the last thing I'll say about it, people who are interested in this, is like, there's a culture on these platforms and it's different from platform to platform. So like I've done, like what I'm really doing here is I'm really just taking a lot of what works on Twitter and doing it in Reddit. So like what really works on Twitter is like, if you can write killer content where you're giving away numbers and stuff that nobody usually shares, that's going to go crazy on Twitter because people are there to learn. And where I think a lot of marketers kind of get it wrong over there is they copy all the viral thread, like the skeleton of it, the shape of it, the hooks, all that kind of stuff. But they don't really get into the meat of here's the numbers, here's the charts, here's what actually works. And so if you're willing to do that, or if you're able to do that, it's always going to pay off. Like it people just love that kind of information because it's so hard to find. So I'm really just copying the playbook from Twitter. But what I've never seen is like the responses that only Reddit can provide. So I would say like 60 to 70% of the replies on this were people who were like, oh my God, thank you for sharing this. This was really cool. Really kind of like uplifting stuff. And then there was this little quarter of people who were like, how'd this guy fund this? And then they started doing like detective work, trying to dig into the subject of this interview's past and like figure out his family history and how he got the money to do the company. And long story short, like they did very impressive looking detective work that was all wrong. So like they found some other guy named Crowley and like they like dug into his, I got just a bunch of generations of Crowleys that are not related to the guy that I wrote about. And ended up convincing themselves that like this guy's just a scam artist. But I guess it goes to show you like the cultures are different on the platform. So you're going to see different types of comments. And but the core of it, I think, still works. It's content marketing. And I think you're doing it on Reddit. Like you said yourself, Reddit is starved for really great ads. I think the same thing is true. LinkedIn is starved for really great ads. Reddit starved for really great content. And if you're writing great content, I would be over there checking it out right now.
Man, let me ask you something. I am struggling to decide where to put resources because everything works to an extent. There's so many people coming up with such creative ways to make things work in all different platforms. Twitter is not working. And I actually was about to send you a whole bunch of stuff about how Threads lost like half of their traffic in a matter of a week. And we can save that for next week if you want to. But either way, Twitter is still in the shit can. LinkedIn is really killing it, dude. I'm pretty bearish on LinkedIn for the next 5 years. The comments and the virality is just really off the charts. And the email signups I'm getting are off the charts too. I still absolutely think YouTube is very, very underutilized. And, you know, I'm battling with the idea of, for all the time I used to spend on Twitter, why don't I just make a Loom video? You actually were the one who set it up. Like, I wish more people did Loom videos. You know, why don't I just record what I'm working on? I mean, even this whole idea of building this sales team. And I mean, Copyblogger Academy is crushing it right now. And I was so surprised because I shared to the Copyblogger newsletter a lot of the lessons that I learned, and I was nervous about doing it because I didn't want to be kind of like a douche, right? About like, hey, this is how I sold you into my own company, right? But I really felt like the lessons were important and they could really, really help a lot of people. And I was really inspired to see how well received it was, where I just said, thank you to everybody who signed up. Like, wow, what a journey this has been. These are all the things I've learned. Like, these are some of the mistakes I've made along the way. And just really sharing my experience, which is something I believe in. And so I think, man, what if I did a Loom video every day doing that about what I'm working on? I could probably bang it out in 10 minutes. It's not like a huge time commitment, right? But then there's Reddit. And I know Reddit is so underutilized. And the power of Reddit is, it's like rocket ship-ish in a way that people that are on more mainstream platforms don't really appreciate. Like, you can have something go viral on Reddit that is so viral, way more than like an Instagram post that you or I can do. And so what I'm getting at is, as you're experimenting with a lot of these growth strategies, and as this is something that is more in your domain now, how are you making these decisions to spend time here and spend time there and try this and experiment with this? Because I'm struggling with that too.
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like it's one of those things where there's a difference between like what you should do and the reality of the situation. So if I was advising somebody else, I would say something like this. I'd be like, well, the best way to decide would be to test a lot and then look at the data to see where the highest value leads are coming from. Because you can get a lot of leads from a certain source or a lot of email signups or whatever, but if they leave the list, if they mark you as spam, if they don't engage, it's not really worth it. We saw this at The Hustle. There was a period of time where we experimented with something called CoReg, which interestingly enough is now like one of the most popular growth mechanisms in the world. Companies are just calling it something different. But CoReg is like, essentially, for people who don't know, you'll sign up for some website and then kind of like on the very last page, it'll be like, hey, do you want to sign up for a bunch of these other newsletters too? And a lot of people don't read it. They just click finish. And so you get their email and you can grow extremely fast using CoReg. Problem is, what we learned after some time was that like when you actually break down the lead source versus their value, absolutely not worth the time. So and that has real world consequences. Like at The Hustle, we went through this thing where like for a while, all of a sudden our NPS fell off a cliff, which was insane because The Hustle was always very well written. We had a very high NPS and all of a sudden it just tanked. And so the entire editorial team was shaken up because it was like, well, something has to be wrong with the content, right? All of a sudden, readers hate the newsletter. When really what the problem was that we ended up finding after like months of digging into it was the growth team had started to experiment with lead sources that didn't want to get the newsletter. They didn't even realize they were signing up for it. So there are very real world consequences to not understanding which of your traffic sources are actually leading to great signups. What does that look like in practice? Right now, I think in practice, there are stages to it. So if you're early, you're just throwing a lot at the wall, right? You're throwing a lot at the wall and you're trying to figure out like what even has enough promise that you could dig into it to see later on if it's paying off, right? So, you know, for us, like I do a couple of things. We share all of our content on Twitter, then sort of pay attention to Twitter to see what takes off. Anything that takes off gets turned into a carousel for LinkedIn. We also share to Hacker News. We share to Reddit. So right now, I'm trying a lot, and I'm not really paying a lot of attention to what's working best. It's just kind of like, is any of it showing any signal? Eventually, we'll get to a point where we do slice and dice each of those sort of like sources to see which of them is working the best. But I think there is a phase where you can just throw a lot at the wall. The thing I would encourage people to think about as they're doing that, though, is like, how can you kind of systematize it a little bit so it's sustainable? Because I feel like if you're trying to share everything everywhere, you can get burnt out really fast. Yeah. But if you build kind of a machine so that like, oh, we finish an article and then it goes into this phase, then it goes into this phase, and then it's, you know, cut and rehashed into this phase. It's a lot more systematic and it's a lot easier to make sure that like you're checking all the boxes on every single thing you create.
Yeah.
What about you? How are you kind of thinking about like resource allocation? Because you're actually spending money now too. Like for us, it's still, aside from my salary, like, you know, it's just all organic. We're just posting stuff places. Yeah.
Well, I'm not spending money yet. Although that's not totally true. I've spent $200 on LinkedIn so far. And my ad is getting a ton of clicks, but it's not getting a whole lot of email signups. But the reason is because I'm just sending it to the homepage of the Stasi site, and there's a pop-up, and it's kind of doing what I expected it to do. I've never even created an ad in a back-end platform before. So I was just trying to say, like, hey, is this thing working? You know what I mean? But yeah. But that's working. And, like, you have to separate the two a little bit because Stasi is kind of my day job. That's the majority of the revenue that we bring in. But then there's my personal brand, and I guess Copyblogger is kind of attached to that. But let me take that back. There's basically two companies. One is more of a personalized company, and the other one is within the healthcare space. And so what I do with Tim Stasi is pretty, like, Twitter first, and then I took what was working on Twitter and put it on LinkedIn, and I recognized that LinkedIn was working really well. So then I did the screenshots and I put the screenshots on Instagram, and that works pretty good, actually, better than I expected it to. But it's still only speaking to like one type of person. You know, it's kind of like the same person on all three of those platforms, I think. And I'm feeling as though and keyword right there is feeling, by the way. Let me pay attention to that. I'm feeling like I'm missing out on this whole other group of people that would be interested in what it is that I put out there, but I just don't have a way to talk to them. So Now let me pull that back away from feeling, right? Month over month, my email list for both Copyblogger and TipStats have grown incrementally since I started. This month for Copyblogger, on July 2nd, I had 202 email signups in one day, which is the most I've ever gotten. I know that's like small time for big shots like you.
Awesome. Yeah, I've never actually, the hustle gets more, but I never led growth at the hustle. So that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, I was pretty pumped about it. July will be the biggest month ever in terms of email signups. And then for Tim Stasi, you know, even so far today on a Sunday, I'll have 36, and so I'm gonna get 382 in the past 7 days. So like, it's working, you know. I just have to. It's so hard to be comfortable with stay on the road or the path that I'm on, because like I'm clearly having success, as opposed to playing the trick on yourself that says like, oh, but I have to do it over here, and I have to do it over here, and I have to do it over here. Reddit is cool. I still think Reddit is not where I should be spending my time. I am pretty intrigued by these YouTube videos, because I think that's interesting. And I think it's, I mean, YouTube is almost as valuable as an email list in terms of like the platform for subscribers that you don't own. I think dollar for dollar, a YouTube subscriber is by far the most valuable type. Probably a podcast is first, actually.
Yeah, podcasts, yeah.
And then YouTube. So I'm thinking about it, but then, you know, I end up walking around in a huge circle, and I come back to exactly where I'm at, and I'm like, what are you talking about, Tim? Just keep doing it. Like, just keep doing exactly what you're doing. I don't know. You know, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, I gotta say, man, I think it was you who said the thing that Hormozy brought up, more, better, new.
And think about it all the time.
I can't get it out of my head ever since then. And what it means to me, I'm not sure if this is exactly how he meant it, but what it means to me is like, whenever I feel like I am suffering from like shiny object syndrome, I pause and kind of think of that whole like more, better, new. So what do you really need in terms of your success metrics or the thing that you're trying to improve? Do you need to do more of the work that you're trying to do? Do you need to do better work, or do you need to try something new? And I think that you know, we're early enough at Hampton that the answer tends to be just more, right? So like social media, we still don't publish that often, and I don't have tons of time to invest in it. And so it's like, before I even go off, we have our core set of platforms. It's Twitter, LinkedIn, the Reddit's entrepreneur subreddit. So it's just one page of Reddit, and then Hacker News. And that's it. I'm not going to expand beyond that. To be honest, you know, I know that there are very successful people who spent 2 to 3 years really just building a presence on Twitter, and you can do that, and you can build a big company. I run it through that more, better, new filter a lot, and that kind of helps me put the blinders on and stay like more focused. But honestly, there's another part of this too, which I think is, you know, it's, you and I are in different positions, because right now I'm talking about growth for a company that I don't run, and you're talking about growth for a company where you literally employ other people. So you have like a responsibility to continue growing the company to a certain extent. But there is this concept of like enough that I think I'm also very interested in. And it kind of reminds me of this company that I'm breaking down right now. Have I told you about Lost Art Press? I think I mentioned them maybe just in passing last week.
Thank you. On last week's episode, they do like the woodworking, right?
Yeah. Well, so this is kind of interesting. The founders are lifetime woodworkers. They write about woodworking. Chris Schwarz is one of the co-founders, and he wrote for Popular Woodworking for years, decades, really. And then at some point, he kind of had this realization, which was like, what happened to all the old woodworking books? They're not really around anymore. After World War II, a lot of like woodworking stuff kind of went out of print. And he and his co-founder built this company that's just dedicated to saving old woodworking books and like bringing them back into the world of craftsmen. And it's so cool. I gotta say, there's like so much that I love about this company, but one of the things is that they're not huge, and they like very much purposefully designed the company in a way where craftsmanship of the product trumps pretty much everything else. And I can see you smiling. I think you're probably looking at their website right now. I'm curious to hear like what your first take of the business idea is, and then I want to tell you like why I like it, and also what kind of where like what sort of bums me out about it.
First take is obviously that it's really, really cool. There's so many things like this that I have huge appreciation for, especially in this is more artistic, but in contractor space, because I know a lot of people are shocked when I say this, but I actually spent, well, not anymore, but the majority of my life I was building houses. And I love it. Like I really loved going to work every day and cutting wood and swinging my hammer and climbing on rafters and even hanging drywall, stuff like that. Like I really, really loved it. And so I appreciate any time somebody brings back craftsmanship. I think it's awesome, but I guess maybe because we just had this conversation, and so the first thing that's come into my head is still like growth minded. Whereas if I would have just found this on, you know, an average Sunday without having this conversation, I probably would have taken a little bit more time to appreciate it. It's just this kind of stuff bums me out because there's so much more. Right, there's that word again that you can do with it, but it seems like they're kind of happy in their little pocket of the craftsmanship universe on the internet. So more power to them. I just I don't know. It seems held back a bit. It seems really restrained.
So this is what I keep going back and forth on too. So I've been digging into this company for a couple of weeks now. And there's a part of me that agrees with you. And like for people who are just listening, here are some examples of why, right? If you go to their website, there's one email capture form on the sidebar, and that's pretty much it. So the site isn't growth optimized. And that's one example of just like what he's talking about. This is a good business. As far as I can tell, they're doing more than $1 million in revenue every year. And there's only two co-founders. But the site isn't optimized in the same way that it would be if they had come from like the world of growth marketing as opposed to the world of hardcore journalism. And so I noticed that too. But then on the other hand, there's a lot that's really interesting about this that to me, I'm like, okay, well, they have all the same aspects as a typical startup. So as an example, they sell books. And I'll talk about the books in a second. They're very well made. But they also have an entire tool business, like where they set up their own foundry and they create like high quality woodworking tools in a way that a lot of companies just can't, because after 2008, a whole bunch of small time manufacturers shut down. Right. So they're like filling a very like interesting need in the market. But in order to get that up and running, it was like 6 months of 100-hour work weeks. Right. So they've got all the same hustle as a startup. And in some ways, they're monetizing the same way as a startup. But when it comes to certain things like growth and stuff, they're not. They don't act the exact same way as a lot of media startups. So I see both sides of that. But man, I've so enjoyed reading into this company a little bit, and finding somebody who like is happy with what they're doing. They take the work seriously enough that it's like the work comes first. You know, and this is, I'm still kind of writing about this, but this is, I think, what I get from woodworking in general, which I'm just very, very new to, but like kind of, I have a growing obsession with. Entrepreneurship is a game that rewards shortcuts. Like, we like stories of some of people who kind of found a way to hack it and make it work, who grow fast, who do all this stuff. Craftsmanship's not the same way. It doesn't reward going fast. It rewards quality, and that's it. And like, there's a whole culture around that where like, not only does it reward quality, but you can't hide if you're not doing quality work because it's all right there on the wood. People can see it. And it's just been so interesting to dive into that world and like refreshing in a way. So I'm really enjoying this company. Like I said, I think, as far as I can tell, they're doing north of $1 million a year. But if you read through their, I guess, some of their like manifesto type stuff, I haven't quite nailed down their revenue yet, but I think they could be much bigger if they optimized just some of the growth stuff and kept the rest of the craftsmanship stuff the same.
So I have three quick comments. One, their blog is so cool. They really just document a lot of the stuff that they're building. And so they got this oak table right here. It says, the first project I tackled with bog oak was this 116-inch long dinner table. It's really cool. Oak is the hardest of all of the wood. So it's very, very heavy. And making an oak table like this is beautiful. I mean, this thing is so beautiful. So I agree. It's one of those back and forth things. And for some reason, I'm being reminded of How to Take Over the World again. There was a late Leonardo da Vinci episode, which was so cool. And he talked about how da Vinci, like, barely finished anything that he started. And there's a side of it where he felt like that's sad, because imagine what could have come out of it if he had the discipline to see through a lot of these art pieces that like aristocrats would hire him to do. But then there was the other side where it's like, but if he did that, then he wouldn't have been the scatterbrained Da Vinci genius. And there was this this duality between him and Michelangelo, where Michelangelo, they think he probably was on the spectrum somehow, and he was like super the opposite, like had to finish things, had to make things perfect. And that was the genius of him, you know, because he didn't do that much, but he made the freaking Sistine Chapel, and there's like not a mistake on the whole thing. So a little bit of a sidebar there, but it makes me question whether is that a feature or a bug, right? Like maybe the genius of the thing is the fact that it is the way it is because it's only them that can do it. But then also, just commenting on what you said there about the way things get rewarded, I think it is so important for everybody to have that in their lives, which is why I'll never, ever, ever make videos or make content about Muay Thai. Because the only way to do something like that is just to suffer through it for years and years and years. Like there is no, I mean, there's natural ability, obviously, and there's practice and there's hard work, but there's just no way to find a Muay Thai head. Mm-hmm. You're going to get punched in the face. And so I think it's important for people to have some distance between the two, because I can talk about entrepreneurship, and it's not like I'm looking for shortcuts in the gimmicky way, like where I don't want to work hard, but yeah, like you're looking for leverage, you're looking for ways to get out a scalability more than you put in. Like that's the whole name of the game. And so I like that game, I like playing that game, right? But I also like having the thing where like 1 hour equals 1 hour, and you can't get more out of 1 hour than what you learned in that 1 hour. So I'm full of sidebars today, but we're just hustling on all of this stuff. And I think it's important.
No, that's good though. You're reminding me of something that Chris said in an interview. He said, everybody's born with about, I think it's like 648 bad dovetails in them, and you just got to get them out. So if you're learning how to carve dovetails, or you're learning how to get punched in the face, like you just, there is no shortcut around it. And I like what you said too about feature versus bug. There, I've been coming to this conclusion myself too, which is like, thank God there are businesses out there like this where the people are, at least on some level, satisfied and, or I would say obsessed with the work first and like growth second, because these are a bunch of books that like would have just disappeared. You know, there's no reason to keep that. Well, I think it's actually kind of interesting is that they're proving there is a reason to keep them in print, because they ship 60,000 books a year. From a little company that is, essentially just two guys and some contractors. So I'm getting a lot from them, but one of them is like, you can build the business your way. It doesn't have to be huge. It can be impactful. And I think part of that comes from obsessing over the work, but I'm going to be spending a lot more time like with this company in particular and just kind of absorbing more that they have to teach, but I've really enjoyed it. So thanks for letting me kind of like break it down here and sharing some of your thoughts on it too. It's been fun.
Yeah, we got to start having interviews on the pod. Not that I don't like talking to you, but like, these are the kind of people that I want to hear from. Like, I don't want to hear the same interview with fucking like Sahil a million times about how he grew his email list, you know, like how cool would it be to talk to these guys?
Yeah. I'll email him. I'll see if I come on.
Yeah.
I know he's done a couple of podcasts. I've listened to him so far. So.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. 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 He's a good interviewer. He, awesome. Super interesting guy. That'd be awesome. So I guess listeners, let us know what you think. Do you want us to start interviewing like entrepreneurs you haven't heard of who are doing really interesting things or what? You can reach out to us, let us know, do a little contribution marketing by sending us your thoughts. And is there anything else that you want to say to the fine people at home?
What else do I want to say to the fine people at home?
More likely, like the fine people in their cars?
Yeah. No, man. This is a fun... I feel like I'm a beginner again. And it's a weird place to be because I've been an expert at this whole content game for so long. I have that buzz where I learn new stuff and I think, oh, I could probably do it that way. Like, well, let's see what happens if I try that way, you know? And so I appreciate everybody letting me kind of stumble through this thing a bit, but I'm excited to share. It's going to be cool, man. I really think it's going to work. It's going to be dope.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening in. Be sure to check out the website, copybloggerpod.com, and we will see you next week.